Can you picture a world where everyone belongs? It may sound like an unrealistic ideal, but it might just be achievable with the principles and action steps offered up in Radical Inclusion, 7 Steps to Help You Create a More Just Workplace, Home, and World by David Moinina Senga. David is the Minister of Basic and Senior Secondary Education and Chief Innovation Officer for the Government of Sierra Leone. He's also a TED Fellow, an Obama Foundation Leaders Africa Fellow, and was included on the 2013 Forbes 30 Under 30 list. Here he is to share some of his big ideas.
Hi, my name is David Moinina Senga. I'm the Minister of Basic and Senior Secondary Education in Sierra Leone and the Chief Innovation Officer. And I just recently wrote a book called Radical Inclusion, 7 Steps to Help You Create a More Just Workplace, Home, and World. Today, I will tell you about 6 insights, 6 takeaways from the book, even though the book says 7 Steps to Help You Create. And those 7 steps are there in the book, but I will not be speaking directly to them. The 7 steps really for anyone to create a more just workplace, home, and world. And in really simple ways, it's not just the bosses or the leaders or the executives or things that you do at work, but really in anything, in your organization, in your community group, in your church, in your women's or gentlemen's group, in your football team, wherever. There are ways in which we can make our society and community more inclusive. And those 7 steps are first identifying the exclusion, naming it, defining it, learning about it, and then listening to understand and learn, listening to people, including those you don't agree with, defining your role, why you, why not you, why now, building a coalition, taking action, and then after you've succeeded in taking action, there will be a new normal, how you adapt to that new normal, and then why we must do this over and over again beyond inclusion. Those are the 7 steps in Radical Inclusion, but I do have other takeaways from the book that I want to focus on. The first one really is this concept that you are not included. The first insight is you are not included. Often we think inclusion, exclusion is about other people. We think that it's not about us. And that could be because we are at a certain class or a certain race or a certain in-group. But we all at some point will face exclusion. For some people, more so than others. If you're a woman at your workplace, at home, in your community, you definitely have systematic exclusion against you. If you're poor, if you have a disability, you will see that most of our built environments and our institutions are really not for you. They're not built for inclusion. If you're a person of color in a minority group, you certainly are not included. But also, even if you were, say, you had power, there are many times when you might injure yourself and then you suddenly realize that the people who have disabilities, who have to use crutches, who have to use wheelchairs, this is not the world that is optimized for them. And so you are not included. It might be that today you're not included, but it might just also be that tomorrow you will not be included. The second insight I would like to focus on is that you can also be part of those in the exclusion. And it's important that we're able to understand that this does not make us bad people forever. And if you think about it, you probably have hosted a party in which not everybody could come, or even if they did come, they did not show up how they wanted to come. If you're a boss who's trying to have some engagement with your staff, do you invite them to the floor that they usually don't come in? Who's in the room? Who's not in the room? Who's at the table? Who's not talking? Are they saying what they truly feel like saying? So we need to make sure that we certainly are able to check ourselves, see how we might be supporting a system or being part of a system that maintains a status quo that is not inclusive of everyone, whether it's women, disabled people, people with disabilities, people who are poor. It's important that we question ourselves. What games are we playing? What parties are we hosting? Who's at the party? How are we interacting with the interns? How are we interacting with the new kid who just showed up? Do we have activities that include people with crutches? Do we have activities that address people who have hearing impairment? People who cannot afford to join us on trips that have cost to it? It's important that we pause to understand and reflect how and in what ways in which we may be actively, unintentionally, or systematically part of a process where we are keeping others out. The third thing to take away from this book is that it is in every one of our interests to work on inclusion. You know, there's the ramps that we have in buildings. Those ramps are for people with wheelchairs and for disability access. And yet the people who use them the most are mothers or fathers who are using baby strollers, business people using suitcases, the mailman coming to drop in your packages. They use the ramps much more than the people with disabilities and in wheelchairs. I also learned that the phone dialing time, when you're dialing the phone, how long it takes, was done intentionally for people with disabilities who might be struggling to make phone calls. And we know how that was important for all of us. Think about eyeglasses, right? There are 2.3 billion people who use these glasses as a 700-year-old technology innovation. And it has transformed how all of us can participate, even as we lose our eyesight with age. So it's in all of our interests to think about inclusion, paid family leave, everybody will benefit, not just women. Social welfare, we all will benefit from it because the system is better. The fourth thing that I would like to focus on is that, you know, working towards a more just world is not only feasible, it is possible. It might seem like it's really difficult for us to work on inclusion. The topics are hard. It can divide families. People don't talk. People don't know how to engage. When we debate, we get entrenched in our views. But that said, we must still work towards it because we have just said it is important and it is in all of our interests. And it is possible. In the book, Radical Inclusion, I share about how on the day that I became minister, my president, President Julius Maada Bio, announced that he will uphold the ban on pregnant girls from going to school. And I went from being super excited that morning to very sad and depressed and thinking that I will be the one who has to tell my daughters and other people that I am working on a policy to keep girls from going to school. Girls who often are rape victims who then become pregnant against their wish. But then I was able to work with the president who gave me lots of hope because he was open to listening to new ideas. We got the data, we listened to other people, and we built a case that allowed the government of Sierra Leone to overturn the ban on pregnant girls. And we went a step further. We passed a law that now makes it a right, not just for pregnant girls, but people with disabilities, seen and unseen disabilities, people who are poor and living in remote areas. They all now have access to education and it's their right. So it is not only possible, we can do it and we can do it quicker and quickly when we build the right coalition, when we build the right support to fight for inclusion. The fifth thing I would like to mention is that the work does not end. And maybe we win. Maybe we have more women paid leave in our organization. We don't stop there. Maybe we say women's rights. There are more women who are participating in political space. We've increased that by a certain percentage. We don't stop there. When we do, the space shrinks again. We've seen that evidently with reproductive rights of women in the United States shrinking. We've seen that access to education is being challenged. Brown versus Board, Roe versus Wade, things that we had taken for granted, we see being questioned again. which means that how women access reproductive rights is being challenged, how people of color and people who've been historically marginalized out of education, that is being questioned again. We have to understand that the work does not end when we achieve one thing. We have to keep going. Otherwise, it's two steps forward, one step back. And even if we have to take one step forward every time, that's what's important. It's important that we do not retrogress and we can keep working on things that will keep expanding the inclusion-exclusion circle, wherever that border is, until we can get ever closer to a more just society. Something I learned from my friend about the high-hanging fruit versus the low-hanging fruit. It's common for people to talk about the low-hanging fruit, but they're talking about things in a really short-term period. They're short-sighted and it's about getting returns quickly and they're moving on to something else. But when we work for the high-hanging fruit, I've learned through my friend Andrew that we get more, actually. There's business value, there's financial value to working for the high-hanging fruit and to make sure that we do the difficult thing. We solve the difficult problem. We build the systems. We build a tall ladder. We take time. We are patient to make sure that everybody is included, to make sure that we are able to deliver on the goals of radical inclusion. For me, in this experience of not just writing the book, because when I wrote the book, I've gotten back to using the tools and the principles within the book, the seven steps, I use it all the time, including recently when we went to create a new law in Parliament about basic and senior secondary education, which has really transformational things like banning corporal punishment from the school system nationwide and guaranteeing education to everybody. 13 years of education in public school, pre-primary all the way through primary and secondary school as a right, and having ways of supporting the community to deliver on that. For me, I see this work as a life's journey, as a way of being. We don't end, we don't stop learning. We always have to keep looking for the people who are not included. Some of it is intentional, some of it is laws, some of it is buildings that need to be reorganized, and it costs money, it costs resources, it takes time. But that's the work that we have to do. It's work that is possible, and it's work that ultimately will be beneficial to all of us, no matter where we are. I hope that you enjoy the book. It is really easy to read, I've heard. Many people have read it on a plane ride or taking a day to read it. And thank you for listening.
Thank you, David. That was Key Insights from Radical Inclusion, Seven Steps to Help You Create a More Just Workplace, Home, and World by David Moinen-Asenga. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.